Welcome in to the 48 Minutes Podcast on Believe, presented by Bet Online. I'm Ross Geiger, joined alongside Bruce Bernstein of Pure Hoops Media and World B, Michael Freer. This is episode number 74, the Curtis Blair episode, as the veteran official has officiated over 600 regular season games throughout 11 seasons in the NBA. Blair is a former second-round pick of the Houston Rockets in the 1992 NBA draft and played professionally in Australia, Austria, and Turkey. But before we get any further, the last of the major pro sports leagues kicks off this week, and BetOnline is your top spot for all your NBA action this season. With MLB postseason, NFL and college football, and NHL in full swing, BetOnline is your number one source for wagering news, odds, trends, and predictions. Get everything NBA at your fingertips with both desktop and mobile access for every sport, anytime. Head to BetOnline today to get in on the action. Don't forget to use our promo code BLEAV, that is B-L-E-A-V, to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. BetOnline, where the game starts. And tonight, Bruce, we'll start with you for opening tip.
All right. Thanks a lot. I have a personal note to start. On Saturday morning, my wife Nancy and I became grandparents for the first time. Our daughter-in-law, Becca, and son, Mitch, are the proud parents of a beautiful baby girl named Sophie Robin Bernstein. She weighed in at 7 pounds, 9 ounces and is absolutely perfect. Both of our adult children are boys, so now that we have a little girl in the family, she already owns me, and I'm here for it. The world she's born into is much different than the one my own kids were born into, but holding that little angel and looking at her innocent face reminds me of all the possibilities that lie ahead for her. So welcome to the world, Sophie. It's already a better place because you're here.
Congratulations, Bruce. All the best to you and your family. And I'm glad to hear that we already have a new listener in Sophie joining the 48 Minutes family here. So congrats to you and the family. Glad you had a wonderful weekend celebrating the news.
Absolutely.
World B.
Thank you, Ross. Reigning MVP Joel Embiid will likely put up numbers this season that will have him in consideration for another MVP award. His numbers this season could even surpass those from last season. But I am here to recommend that Embiid officially, or unofficially, be eliminated from consideration for the award this season after making one of the all-time silly pass attempts back in the 76ers season opener against the Bucks last week. To set the scene quickly, the Sixers were leading by 5 midway through the fourth quarter against a team favored by many to win the title. Out on the wing, Embiid took a pass from the baseline and, for reasons still passing understanding, decided to punch the ball, not pass the ball, punch the ball, to a teammate out at the top of the key. Malik Beasley took the easiest pass he'll ever receive, and eventually it led to a 3-point basket. As a refresher, Malik Beasley plays for the Bucks. It was a momentum change, to be sure. The Bucks went on a run from that moment on and came back to win by 1. Now, turnovers happen all the time. Nothing wrong with that. But to try and punch a ball to a teammate, not a touch pass, a punch pass, instead of simply making the easy pass, by made Embiid look like the basketball version of Manny Ramirez. And to our resident Red Sox fan, Bruce, he knows that in this case, that's not the compliment it sounds like.
You know, you've heard of a no-look pass. That was like a no-touch pass.
Yes. So sorry, Embiid. You may wind up with better MVP numbers than last season, but to me, you've already kissed that award goodbye.
I don't know about you, World B. I appreciated the breakdown there, but I thought it was a lovely pass. I was watching the game and was very happy with the result of the punch pass.
Yes, Malik Beasley was especially appreciative of the pass.
Yeah.
You know something really funny, though? I looked up, you know, Joel Embiid's stupid pass or whatever on YouTube, and they showed the one last year against Cleveland where he sort of made a hook pass that sort of went over the backboard into the crowd. And all I could think of was, remember when Giannis was on and he was talking about setting up the ladder at the corner of the court? I thought, that's about the only person that would have had any chance at catching that pass, and that would have been if Giannis was on the top step of that ladder.
Yeah, I've seen that one too. That one's a great one. So he's just adding to the list of highlights, but certainly that was a head-scratcher watching that opening night game in Milwaukee. As for my opening tip, the NBA has released their in-season tournament home court designs for each of the 30 teams. And to put it lightly, each court design is interesting to say the least. While I definitely do not approve of the designs, I actually am extremely appreciative of the visual difference from each team's normal court, as this will help us all understand what matchups are in the East, which matchups are counting for the in-season tournament games and which ones are not. If you haven't had a chance to see all the courts, I strongly encourage you to do so, and I think you're going to definitely be shocked once you see them. I'm real curious how these courts are actually going to end up looking on television. Bruce, maybe you'd be a better guy to kind of give me a feel for that, because they're all bold colors and there's not much hardwood there. If I had to pick a favorite from first glance, I'd have to say the Pacers court is my favorite because it's just absolutely ridiculous. So I just went with the most ridiculous one.
I was, you know, when I was looking at him, I agree with you. I mean, there's so much color and so much boldness on it. Will we be able to like see the players against that background? I mean, on the low angle stuff, you know, that won't be a problem. But when you go to the old, you know, camera one, which is the high half court camera, that's going to be interesting. Let's put it that way.
Interesting indeed, but certainly should be fun to see those courts being debuted and as we get set for our first in-season tournament. Well, as we get to our first quarter here, thought we could discuss the undefeated teams after week one. And Bruce, we'll start with the team on your cap here, the Boston Celtics. They are 3-0 now with wins over the Knicks, Heat, and the Washington Wizards. We'll start with you. What have you liked to see from your C's so far?
Well, my theme for that team so far is winning while settling in. The offense is definitely a work in progress. The ball is sticking way too much with them. They're number 29 in assists. You know, that's not good enough. You need to be better than that. Porzingis has been excellent. Tatum is doing Tatum things. Jaylen Brown had a slow start in the first game, but, you know, he's picked it up quite a bit in the second and third game. They're really doing a great job on defense, though. You know, they're number one in the NBA in block shot differential. They're plus 5.5 block shots a game, which is great. But, you know, they're three-point, you know, and Holiday, Drew Holiday and Derek White are the top two shot-blocking guards in the NBA. They're both averaging two, although on Monday night, White only had one, so his average is down. Drew had two more. Holiday and White are tied in block shot average with the likes of Giannis, Karl-Anthony Towns, and Rudy Gobert, okay? And as we know, defense travels. They're allowing opponents to shoot under 40%. A little shaky defending the three, but, you know, they're doing a good job rebounding. So I'd say, you know, to be 3-0 while really not having their act together offensively is a very good sign.
And World B, I know that earlier last week, you and Bruce weren't on very good speaking terms as your Knicks played host to the Boston Celtics on opening night. What can you tell us about what you saw from the Boston Celtics in that matchup with the Knicks?
Well, they shot the lights out, and Tatum was, you know, he's my pick for the MVP, and he certainly looked like it on that night. Porzingis really enjoyed the Garden floor. I think he had a 30-point game. Tatum, yep. If I remember right, had 34. It's really hard to, you know, when they're all going right, it's a really hard matchup. And I had said during the summer that they were sacrificing defense for offense. When they made this trade for Porzingis, they decided to go all in offensively. Well, that may not necessarily be true. I think they just changed their defensive style a little bit. When Porzingis is on the court, in the first week, I think opponents shot like 8 of 20 at the rim when Porzingis was on the court defending it. So he's absolutely the difference maker at the rim that you would think, you know, Robert Williams was when he was there and healthy and stuff. So I don't think, you know, this is going to turn out to be a really, really, if everybody stays healthy, a really, really big game changer to Porzingis deal.
Yeah, I certainly agree there, and they continue to roll here to tonight. As of Monday, when we are recording, they won 126-107 in Washington against the Wizards. Big games from your top duo there, Bruce, Tatum, 33, Jaylen Brown, 36. We've seen that a time or two before, those two going off. So scary sights right now in Boston for the Eastern Conference as they continue to roll. Now, another team that was undefeated heading into the night. I believe they are on the brink of losing, but that is the Indiana Pacers, the team that we were all pretty high on heading into the season this year. They were 2-0 last week with wins over the Wizards and Cavaliers. World B, I'll start with you on this one. You know, what are some notes and things you've taken away from the Pacers' start?
Well, I thought they got off to good starts this season. In terms of first half and stuff like that, Halliburton is Halliburton. Their offense was outstanding the first week. I think they had the most efficient offense for the week, that it's just a week old. Their bench was outstanding. I think they had a tremendous bench play. The starters weren't exactly terrific, we'll put it that way, for the first couple of games. But they got some great play off the bench, which, you know, we saw them do last year as well. So there's, you know, there's a lot to like. You're going to have hiccups. But I think their offense was really the reason they started off so well.
Yeah. Bruce?
Yeah. I mean, my note on them is buckets and more buckets. I mean, going into Monday, they were tied for the league lead in point differential, 17.5, with the Orlando Magic, which I know World B is going to talk about in a couple moments. Plus 8.5 in assist differential. That's second in the NBA. Fewest turnovers. They were averaging 134 points a game, which was number one by a mile. Now, that Monday night, they only managed 105, so that number is going to come down. But they were making 52 field goals per game. I mean, number one by a mile, okay? And playing at a really fast pace. You know, field goals attempted 102.5 a game. Again, big, big numbers there. So shooting well from three, 43% as a team, seven players averaging double figures. And as you mentioned, the aforementioned Tyrese Halliburton, 20.5 points, 12 dimes, and a 6-to-1 assist to turnover ratio. He's clearly headed for another all-star appearance this year. So Indiana is going to be a team that runs up and down the court, gets a lot of buckets, and we'll see if their defense can get close to the level of their offense, Ross.
Yep. I think everything starts and ends with Tyrese Halliburton. And tonight is no different, as they did lose to the Chicago Bulls 112-105. Tyrese Halliburton, 1-for-8 from three-point land. Even Buddy Hield off the bench, someone they rely upon for some off-the-bench scoring. 3-of-8, so that's 4-of-16 shooting from two of your best three-point shooters. That's not going to get it done. And when you have a difference of 7 points there, I think that's really kind of where they fell short. But one of the bright spots for them that I've really taken a liking to is Bruce Brown. I mean, coming into the year, I mean, I knew he was a solid player, but how much better or how much better could he be, or was he able to survive without the Joker? I mean, the Joker makes everyone around him look so much better than they likely are. So yeah. I had my fair share of doubts, but he's off to a tremendous start in Indiana and seems to be giving them quite a lift. So keep an eye on the Pacers moving forward. Now we'll be, as Bruce teased, we are going to talk about your Orlando Magic. They were 2-0 last week with wins over the Rockets and Blazers. So kind of, you know, strength of schedule, let's keep that in mind. But, you know, I don't want to rain on their parade. How about you tell us more about the positives?
Heaven forbid you do that. you don't want to rain on my parade, but yet you did. It's fine.
It's worth mentioning.
It absolutely is worth mentioning. There's a reason to pump the brakes on their start. But, you know, the other thing is last season they started 5-20. So 2-0 beats 5-20. For me, you know, they haven't, you're right, the opponents, they've trailed for less than 5 minutes total in the two games, so it's not as if they've been pushed so far. But you know, their defense is, they had a really good defense after, you know, the first 25 games. I mentioned how they just really were terrible, after the first 25 games they were 29-28 the rest of the year. And he had a defense that was, you know, among the best in the league. And so far this season, they're one of three teams that are holding opponents to less than a point per possession. You know, it's Minnesota, the Pelicans, and the Magic. So you can hold a team to less than a point per possession in any era, you're doing good. In this era, the way the offenses are, you're really doing good. They need some, you know, they their shooting is less than impressive. We'll put it like that. They're only shooting about 29% from three. But here's the thing about them, and one of the guys that's got to get going, Banchero, hasn't been doing it, but he gets to the line. They get to the line as well as any team outside, I think, the Celtics in the first week. And that is huge in terms of free throw attempt rate, which is how many free throw attempts you make per 100 field goal attempts. So if you go to the line, if you have a 29% free throw rate, that means you take 29 shots at the line for every 100 field goal attempts. That's pretty good. That's where they are. They're a team that gets to the line, and we'll see if it continues. But they, that part of it will continue, whether they can match up with opponents like they did with the Portland and Houston. Well, that remains to be seen.
Bruce?
Defense and rebounding. This is a huge team. Paolo, 6'10". Franz Wagner, 6'10". Carter Jr., 6'10". Mo Wagner, 6'11". Jonathan Isaac, 6'10". I mean, they are big, and they're rebounding the ball. They're tied for first, as I mentioned, in point differential. Number two in rebound differential, plus 12 per game, okay? 51 rebounds a game, number three in the league. They do play at a very slow pace, though. Only 83 field goal attempts per game. So, you know, they're as will be said, they may be shooting okay overall, 47%, but only 29% on threes, which is fourth worst in the entire league. But defense, they lead the league in fewest points allowed, 91.5. They're tied for number one in fewest rebounds allowed, 39, and fewest buckets allowed, 33.5. Paolo, as you mentioned, his scoring numbers are down, but he is getting 6 rebounds, 4.5 assists, and they're getting really nice play from Franz Wagner and Cole Anthony, 19 points a game. So this definitely is a team that's got some young guys, some big guys, and they look like they're going to be a really fun team to watch. And I want one of World B's teams. He's got like 5 of them. I want one of them to play over their head this year.
That'd be nice. I think we all do, just to keep the sanity here on the show. But I think tonight, as we're taping here on Monday night, is a true test for them. Show us really what you're about, because they have a great opportunity that lies ahead of them in L.A. here tonight. The Lakers, on a second night of a back-to-back, having to play an overtime game and a loss to the Sacramento Kings the night before. The Magic head into L.A. This is a true test here tonight. I mean, yes, they're going up against LeBron James, Anthony Davis, but you guys both just talked about their length, right? So I think tonight is a really prove-it-to-me night. If they can go into L.A. and pull off the quote-unquote upset, I think that they might really have something here early on in the season. And as you pointed out, World B, I mean, going from 5-20 a year prior and starting the year 2-0, regardless of who you're playing, is great for a young team.
Here's the other thing, too, with them. We talked about how tall they are, how big they are. They absolutely got to get some good shooting or decent play from their guards. They have all these young guards in the rotation, and none of them can shoot. I mean, let's just tell it like it is, or they're inconsistent at best. If they can get Suggs, Fultz, any of those guys to play with any, you know, Cole Anthony, any consistency from the backcourt with the length that they have, because clearly their top two guys are becoming Banchero and Franz Wagner. Yeah, that looks like they're two guys to go to bat with every night offensively. They get some play out of the guards. I agree. They really could be make some noise going forward.
Yep, and keep that in mind with Paolo Banchero's assist numbers, of course. We're talking about a team that can't shoot. Of course, the assist numbers are going to be down because you got to have guys make shots if you're going to earn assists. So moving right along here, let's talk about the New Orleans Pelicans. They were 2-0 last week, and they had wins over both the Grizzlies and Knicks. Bruce, I'll start with you on the Pels.
They are grinding people on defense. Great perimeter defense, allowing just 23.7% on three-point shooting by their opponents, number one in the NBA. They're number one in overall in field goal percentage allowed, which is one of the statistics that my old mentor, Dr. Jack Ramsey, always said is the defensive stat, opponent field goal percentage. Number three in fewest points allowed. They're not a great rebounding team, but they kind of hold their own on the boards. They're right there. Zion is 23.5 on nearly 60 2% shooting from the floor, okay? Brandon Ingram also off to a hot start, 22.5, a game on over 51%. And C.J. McCollum is a nice number three at 18 a game on 44% from downtown. So I am concerned with their scoring off the bench. I don't know that they have a whole lot of it. But look, if Zion is going to be able to play a lot of games, that obviously bodes well. So hopefully he's going to stay healthy and keep his weight down.
Yep. World B.
I think going forward, they won't have a problem with their bench. Trey Murphy's hurt. Alvarado's hurt. Matt Ryan's looked pretty good coming off the bench there. A guy they just picked up on waivers. He's the big-time shooter, whatever. The one thing that's weird right now is with that big three, which hadn't played together very often, Zion, Brandon, and McCollum, I think they were only like 10 games last year. They were all on the court together. So they were on the court, first two games together, and their offense, when the three of them were there, was terrible in terms of efficiency. It worked well when you got one of the combinations out of there for whatever reason. I don't suspect that'll be the case going forward. But they're a team. They're one of my favorite teams to watch because they just don't shoot the ball very well, and yet they're one of the most efficient teams because they grab rebounds on the offensive end and second chance points. They force turnovers. They get up on the fast break. They do all the other things you want to do for a team. Like Bruce said, they're a gritty team. They're gritty at the offensive end as well as the defensive end. I think once they get everybody healthy, they were a really good team last year before they got injured, before Zion got out. And they were one of the top teams in the West before that happened. So they're a team, if everybody's healthy, health is always a big issue with everybody, they could be a really serious challenger to one of the top four spots in the West. I really mean that.
You know, some of the characteristics that you just mentioned sounds a lot like Memphis's team last year. You know, not a great shooting team, but efficient, you know, pounds the glass, forces turnovers. So that formula worked well for Memphis last year, probably better than it's working this year.
They're my other team, along with the Pelicans. I enjoy watching, and when I have to write up my reports to the guys, those are the two teams I enjoy the most to write up because they do everything the way goes against the way the league is right now. The league is all about let's get the best shooters, let's how many shots he can make. And they just say, no, if we don't shoot well, we're still going to beat you. We're still going to be efficient because of all this.
Yeah, and speaking of things I enjoy, when it comes to the New Orleans Pelicans, someone who I've been watching a ton of and very intrigued by is Jordan Hawkins, the shooting guard out of UConn. Mm-hmm. He has a quick trigger. He's one of their best off-the-bench scorers at the moment with the guys Trey Murphy and Alvarado injured. He could be a big piece of this team moving forward, especially as C.J. McCollum's career continues to kind of fade into the sunset. I could see him maybe in a year or two being a big-time impact on this New Orleans team moving forward. Another team that had an awesome first week, the Dallas Mavericks. They were 2-0 with wins over both the Spurs and Nets. Bruce, I'll start with you. What have you seen from the Mavs?
The Mavericks alphabet consists of 25 letters because there's no D. Okay.
Nice.
Thank you. They allow opponents to shoot over 50% from the field, which is abysmal. Over 41% on threes, not good. Their offense is good, but they do tend to turn the ball over quite a bit. Their differential on turnovers is -6.5, which is worst in the league. And if the defense doesn't improve, they'll struggle to continue having one of the best records because that offense, you know, maybe isn't going to be able to stay at that level. Luka obviously doing it all going into Monday night, 41 points a game leading the league, 11.5 rebounds, 8.5 assists, 58% shooting from the floor, 48 on threes, okay, which means he's shooting 68% on twos, which numbers are just just crazy. Kyrie has struggled a little bit from the floor. He's under 17% on threes, but he's not one of the culprits when it comes to the turnovers. And this rookie center, Derek Lively, man, 12.5 points a game on 91.7% field goal shooting. That's not a mistake. So he was 7-for-8 against Wemby and the Spurs in that game. So Dallas, I don't really have a whole lot of confidence in them. I think at the beginning of the year, we set the over-under at 43.5, and I said under. I'm still going there, but it's an encouraging start for them.
Will be.
Well, I'm going to take one issue with what Bruce said there about the one of the things that they've I think that the Mavs have done well. They haven't turned the ball over. I think they're what second in turnover percentage this through the first couple of games, which obviously we're just talking about a couple of games. It's a small sample, but anytime you're getting Luka and Kyrie on the court and you're not making mistakes, well, that's always a good thing. I would figure they're winning close games. I mean, last season with Luka and Kyrie on the court in those what we call clutch minutes when the game is tight with the 5 minutes to go and it's within 5 points, all that stuff, they only won about 3 of 14 games or something like that when those two were in the lineup. So far this year, they're 2-0 in those games. They won the close games. So things are a positive for them. How long it lasts, who knows? I'm of the belief I got to stay with it, because I was the only one of the three last season that thought this trade was worth making. So I can't back out now when they're starting to win. I'll see how it goes going forward. I do agree Derek Lively is been a refreshing sight to see on the Mavericks and whatever his work ethic and everything. And if they can shoot like they've shot and keep take care of the ball, they're going to be in the mix.
Yeah, I mean, I can't disagree with you right now, but I'm kind of in Bruce's camp here. If I had to be a buyer or seller on the Dallas Mavericks, I'm certainly still selling. I mean, it is early, but without the defense, I mean, there's only so much and so long that you can go throughout a season outscoring teams. And I mean, we look again at their strength of schedule. They played the Spurs, who, of course, have Wemby, but have been struggling, and the Brooklyn Nets, who just got their first win tonight.
By the way, the Spurs had them down big time to start that game, if we all remember. They had jumped out to a real nice lead before things woke up. You're right about the defense with the Mavericks. I mean, opponents the first two games, I think he shot about 40% from three. And while they don't commit turnovers, they're not forcing any either. I think it's only like 17 in two games. That can't last if you want to. You're right. Then they're going to have to outscore everybody. Now they have the players, two players that can do it, but you're asking them to do it every night. And that eventually, I agree with you, won't work.
Yep. And last but surely not least, the reigning champions, the Denver Nuggets. Who's shocked to hear they're 3-0 with wins over the Lakers, Grizzlies, and Thunder? Bruce?
Joker runs the show, period. Yeah. It's the Joker show. 26, 13, 7.7 assists, 61.5% from the floor. You got to call them the MVP favorite right now. They're the top shooting team in the league, 53% as a team. They're number 5 in three-point shooting. They do most of their damage, though, from the mid-range and downtown. They're dead last in the league in free throw attempts, which is kind of interesting, and also dead last in free throws made per game. But they have had the quality wins, as you mentioned. Great perimeter defense, holding opponents under 28% shooting threes. And winning by an average of 16-plus points a game. So Denver is right where you expected them to be.
Yep. World B?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to look at one really encouraging sign, you need more encouraging signs from the Nuggets, last year they were so dependent on the success of when Joker was on the court. They dominated opponents, really a ridiculous efficiency number when he was on the court. This season, when he's been off the court, they've really been dominating opponents, which is a really encouraging sign for the bench, considering they lost Bruce Brown, they lost Jeff Green. We were all worried about how that would work out. Well, 1 week in, three wins, it's working just fine. So that's the most encouraging stuff. You want to look at going forward with this team, how do they do when Joker's off the court? Right now, they're doing outstanding.
Yeah, and I think the biggest statement game for the Denver Nuggets came on Sunday afternoon. I was certainly looking forward to watching the Oklahoma City Thunder having their home opener against the Denver Nuggets. Obviously, the Thunder came into that game undefeated 2-0, and by halftime, it was pretty much all said and done. I mean, Denver was just controlling every aspect of that game, showing why they are the defending champions there. And that was just a statement win for me that this team is for real, and they certainly are not missing Bruce Brown and Jeff Green as much as I thought they might.
Yeah, real quick, we talked about during the summer, and I mentioned how it was really – they had gotten, lack of better phrase, crapped on while they were in the process of winning the championship. Their competition was criticized or whatever, and I mentioned how they were going to come into this season with a chip on their shoulder, even though they were the defending champs, because of the way they were perceived, and they're certainly acting like it right now.
Yeah. No doubt about that. And as we quickly get into our second quarter here, just to quickly touch on the winless teams after week one, the Brooklyn Nets were 0-2, but they did get a big win tonight in Charlotte on Monday. Brooklyn had lost to the Cavs and the Mavericks. Memphis Grizzlies 0-3 with losses to the Pelicans, Nuggets, and Wizards. It appears they are going to lose to the Mavericks, as that one is late into the fourth now, so that could be 0-4 for them. The Houston Rockets are 0-3 with losses to the Magic, Spurs, and Warriors. Two of those losses are a little bit concerning. They couldn't get one win. And then, of course, the Portland Trailblazers actually came into this week 0-3, but they got a surprising win on the road on a second night of a back-to-back in Toronto here on Monday night against the Toronto Raptors. But they had losses to the Clippers, Magic, and 76ers. So what I want to pose to you guys is this. Of those four teams that I mentioned, the Nets, Grizzlies, Rockets, and Blazers, which team are you most concerned about and which team are you most optimistic about? Bruce?
Memphis I'm concerned about because, they're not going to have Ja Morant until about a third of the season is done. They're not going to have Steven Adams at all. They're poor offensively and they're middle of the pack defensively. Their rebounding has gone like into the toilet this year after being a really good rebounding team. So I'm concerned about Memphis. I feel with Houston, there's definitely going to be growing pains there, but signs of hope. I mean, Alperen Şengün has just been crushing it so far. 21-year-old center, 19 points, 9 rebounds, almost 7 assists. It's almost like he's a little mini Sabonis or Joker in his ability to kind of, dish the ball as well as grab the boards and get some buckets. So they're a young team. Jalen Green, 21. Jabari Smith Jr. and Amen Thompson, 20. Tari Eason, 22. Cam Whitmore, 19. Okay. So that's just a whole growing pain situation there. I expect them to get better as the season goes on. With Memphis, I think they're kind of going in the other direction.
Yeah, will be. What's your glass half full team and half empty team?
Glass half full is the Nets. Are the Nets? I think there's a lot of talent on that team. Let's just put it that way. I think they're missing all their big three from a season ago, and I don't know if they have enough to get a playoff spot. But I think they'll be right there. They're going to play better defense than they've really shown right now. Cam Thomas is. We were talking about before we went on is buckets personified. So he's going to get points after points after points. And I think Mikal Bridges is a star player. They're getting up and down the court. So I think they're going to be okay going forward. They certainly look like it Monday night. The glass half empty is for me, I'm going against Bruce's pick. I'm not on the Rockets bandwagon. I haven't been for years for the simple reason they just can't shoot. They got all these young guys. They couldn't shoot last season. They went and got Fred VanVleet, who was coming off one of the worst shooting seasons of his career, as if that was going to help that team, and they still can't shoot. Now, maybe they'll change. It's 1 week, whatever. But the fact is, the other team besides the Nets, the Rockets, the Blazers, the Grizzlies, the one thing they all have in common, their effective field goal percentage is in the tank right now to start the season.
Yeah, no doubt about that. I would say for me, the team I'm most optimistic about is still – going to be the Houston Rockets. I think with Ime Udoka, I think he's going to have the opportunity here to really kind of narrow in on his rotation once he figures out, his lineups and kind of just who he trusts in big situations. I'm staying optimistic with some of those young guys developing throughout the year and some of those bigger veterans that they signed to big deals, and Dylan Brooks and Fred VanVleet stepping up their games. And then the team that I wish was much better, but I'm going half empty, is the Portland Trailblazers. They just lost Anthony Simons for 4 to 6 weeks with a hand injury. That is a killer for them. He was their best shooter and scorer. He was my pick to win most improved player. Boy, did that go down the drain fast there. But Scoot Henderson
also. Not necessarily.
I mean, we'll see. But
there's plenty of season left.
Yeah, I don't know.
But then you get to the Christmas.
I'm pretty down in the dumps, World B, so I appreciate
the lift up here. I like him too. I was very disappointed when I saw that. I agree. They need everybody they can get to see them develop, and him going down is a real killer.
Yep. And then the other one that's been very disappointing for me, as I'm sure you guys are surprised to hear, Scoot Henderson has not been that great, turning the ball over a lot, not really putting up anything in the scoring column. I thought he was much more prepared and ready for the NBA regular season than what he's shown us so far. So hopefully he can, you know, kind of get back on track. But the one development I like with the Blazers, Shaedon Sharpe, he's getting a huge opportunity to really step up in Simon's absence. And I may talk about him later. But with that, we've gone ahead and reached the halftime buzzer. So we're going to take a quick break and come back with you for the second half. And we're back with the start of our third quarter, and let's focus in on some matchups that we're looking forward to this week. And World B, I'll start with you on this. What's one of the two games that you've selected for a game you can't wait to watch?
Well, we've already seen it once this season, but I'm looking at Kings at Warriors.
Okay,
I think Warriors had a nice road win at Sacramento last week. Kind of a surprising considering, you know, how bad the Warriors were on the road. They came into Monday already 2-0, trying to make it 3 wins on the road against the Pelicans. So we'll, you know, see how that develops and stuff. But yeah, I'm looking a real weird schedule quirk for this meeting, because if you go back to last season, the last game of the regular season, I think, and then the playoffs, and then this year, for the Kings over a 25 game stretch going from last season through the first 16 games this season, they'll play the Warriors 11 times. Wow. Between the playoffs and the regular season. That's a weird thing. 11, you know, 11 out of 25 is, you know, that's a weird thing. So they're going to be sick of them in a few weeks when they play them for a third time. So I'm looking forward to seeing those two teams had such a great series last playoffs. I'm looking forward. I enjoyed the first one. I'm looking forward to the next meeting this week.
Nice. Bruce?
Wednesday night, the upstart Pacers against the established contender Celtics. Boston still undefeated. Indiana, as we said, took one on the chin Monday night. Can Tyrese Halliburton penetrate the perimeter duo of D-White and Drew Holiday? If he can't, okay, their three-point shooters are not going to get those clean looks. You know, Miles Turner and Kristaps Porzingis will be a matchup to watch in the middle. That should be kind of fun. And Bruce Brown, Aaron Nesmith, and Obi Toppin are going to have to play well against the two Jays. As we said earlier, Indiana loves that fast pace, and I think Boston will look to probably control the tempo in that game and maybe slow it down just a bit. So it should be a contrast in styles on Wednesday.
Yeah, that definitely could be a fun one there. As for mine, I got the Pistons at Pelicans on Thursday. The Pistons are off to a promising hot start. They've been showcasing their depth, even without Bojan Bogdanovic, and who doesn't want to see Beef Stew, aka Isaiah Stewart, matched up with Zion Williamson? I think that would be a matchup I want to see on Thursday night. So I'll be tuned into that one for sure.
I like that too. That's a good one.
All right, World B, what's your second game?
I'm going with Bruce's team there, the Celtics. I want to see them on the road against Brooklyn. I think more of Brooklyn than a lot of people do, and I think this is going to be as Bruce talked about, trying to slow the pace down with the Pacers or whatever. I think the pace in this Celtics-Nets matchup is going to be up and down. I think the Nets have shown they want to do the fast break. They want to get out in transition. They got a lot of athletes. They're going to go up and down the court. And I think the Celtics are fine doing that, and they're going to hoist up threes like, you know, they're going out of style or something. And so I think a lot of points are going to be in that game. There's going to be a lot of action. And I want to see – let's see what the Nets – you know, I'm touting them as being better than people think. Well, that, here's a good opportunity in Brooklyn to show what you got.
Absolutely. Bruce?
I like the Knicks and the Bucks on Friday. It's going to be the early ESPN game, so everybody with cable has a chance to check that one out. You know, Dame Lillard had 39 in the opener, and then he went for just 6 against the Hawks in that ugly loss over the weekend. He bounced back nicely on Monday night. He's at 21 with about 4 minutes left in that game. Julius Randle has had shooting issues in the first 3 games for New York. I mean, just under 26% on twos, okay? He's shooting better from three. He's at 30% on threes, and his free throw shooting has not been good. Giannis does Giannis things. He always does Giannis things. But he's having a little bit of a turnover issue, too. Averaged 5 a game in the first 2 games. That's too many. The Bucks were blown out by Atlanta on Sunday at home. The Knicks could only manage 87 against the Pelicans. The Bucks look like they're going to be able to finish off Miami on Monday night. So I'm going to enjoy that one. I think Milwaukee and the Knicks will be a fun matchup on Friday.
Absolutely. I can't wait to watch that one myself. As for my second game, the Warriors at Thunder. And I think any Warriors road game earlier on this season is intriguing after last year's road results on the season. So I'm really looking forward to any time the Golden State Warriors have to hit the road. But this one in particular should be action-packed. Oklahoma City is super young. They're a talented powerhouse in the West going up against the aging, yet very experienced and successful Golden State Warriors. So the Warriors should have their dynasty core back in order, as I believe Draymond Green is reportedly back healthy, should be playing, I believe, later here tonight on Monday. So really looking forward to those teams squaring off, little young versus old action. And with that, let's go ahead and get to our fourth quarter. And in honor of Bruce becoming a grandfather, I thought we were going to have some fun with a classic children's game. We're going to play a little red light, green light, NBA edition. You guys remember that game as a kid?
For sure.
Absolutely.
Awesome. So I've got a handful of different comments here, and I'm going to give you guys the option to either red light it or green light it as we move forward here. So first things first, Atlanta Hawks forward Jalen Johnson, who's off to a very hot start. Was he the best kept secret? And now do we know why the team moved on from John Collins? Bruce?
I'm going with red light there. Okay. He was okay in his first 2 seasons, but trading John Collins had much more to do with John Collins than with some expectation that Johnson would be great. So I'm going red light on that one.
All right, Will B?
Yeah, I put green light, but with an asterisk, because I think you were right. Jalen Johnson is it's good to see him get some opportunity, and he looked great opening night. He had 21, I think, and he's in double figures all 3 games. But I'm with Bruce. The trade of John Collins was about getting rid of that contract, and they couldn't find anybody for the long. They've been trying to do that for a while, and they finally found a suitor, sucker, whatever you want to call it, and somebody to take that deal off his hands, off the Hawks' hands. So I think the two are right, but I don't think it was green light, but with an asterisk.
All right. Well, as the head traffic controller here, I'm going to actually say that you just called that a yellow light, but that's right. Not an option here. So it's a
green light. It is.
All right. Second one, the 2-1 LA Clippers that appear to be comfortably set with an already solid second unit. They don't want or need James Harden. World B.
I did a green light on this. Okay. Because they do have quality guys off the Clippers are about their starters. It's what's how it's going to be. They're 2 big guys. We know that their health of their side. I mentioned it last week, but I think Nick Batum, Norman Powell, Bones Island, Mason Plumlee to come off the bench. Yeah, there's a solid unit there. They all stay healthy. I don't understand the fascination with the Clippers wanting James Harden as much as they do. I understand the other end of it, which we'll discuss, but I don't understand it from the Clippers' end, so I say that's a green light.
All right, Bruce?
Green light. Adding Harden to this team will give them an aging veteran who's going to be in a contract year looking for his stats so he can cash in on free agency at the end of the season. Stay away.
I like that. All right, next one. The 2-1 Philadelphia 76ers should be comfortably set with Tyrese Maxey running the point. They don't want or need James Harden. Bruce?
Green light. Same reason I would advise the Clippers against taking Harden. Maxey is the future and Harden is the past. Daryl Morey just needs to find one sucker to take James.
World B?
No, for me, it's a red light. I think they need him. The five starting five are the five preferred lineup, you know, that they had last year. Indeed, Harden, Tobias Harris, PJ Tucker, Maxey. That was the best five-player lineup in the Eastern Conference last season in terms of net efficiency. They outscored opponents by over 12 points per 100 possessions with that group on the court. They need James Harden. If they want to be competitive, if they want to win a title, they need James Harden on that court. Now, they're not going to do it, I don't think. I don't think there's any way that works out. The Sixers are pretty much sealed that by not letting him play. And I just don't see it happening. But if you want to win a title, if you want to compete with the Celtics, with the Bucks, yeah, they need him.
All right. Threw two fun ones in here at the end. So red light, green light. Pelicans head coach Willie Green calling the pairing of Zion Williamson and Brandon Ingram, quote, the best freaking duo in the NBA. Bruce?
Red light. Tap the brakes, Willie. Talk to me at the All-Star break. But I don't blame him for feeling real good right about now.
Yep, will be.
Oh, that's a big time red light. I would like to see more. You know how many games they played together last season? 12.
Yeah.
Really? I mean, that's my sample size. 12 games. And you're going to pull a stunt like that? I understand where he's coming from. I get it. You promote your guys, but no, that's a red light. I got to see a little bit more than a dozen games before I go that route.
All right. Red light, green light. Nikola Jokic stating Chet Holmgren, while he's a talented young player, he needs to be a little fatter. Bruce.
Green light. Chet has the talent, but needs more muscle. Maybe that also includes adding some fat, too.
World B.
Oh, yeah, that's a green light. Anybody who could see the lamppost that is Chet Holmgren would agree with that. I mean, he's got the talent beyond belief, but yeah, I mean, he can have some of mine if he really needs to get fatter. I'm more than willing to get rid of it. I got plenty. We could actually even out there the way, you know, the old fatso here. So, yeah, it's green light on that.
All right. And before we get to our final thoughts here, I do have my first edition of this season's Best Bets. And I've got five early season same game parlay and player prop targets. Starting with Norman Powell. It's no secret this guy is looking to get buckets. He does a great job drawing fouls and always stays aggressive offensively. He's an automatic, easy add for 12 points for a same-game parlay. Also going to go with one of his teammates, Russell Westbrook. He's averaging 7.3 rebounds per game in just over 30 minutes a game. Russ is almost an absolute lock to grab 6 rebounds, which I was able to get in a player prop for him on Sunday night at plus 105 against the Spurs. So that one cashed. Keep an eye on Russ's rebounds. Third, I'll go with Shaedon Sharpe. With Portland's best shooter and scorer, Anthony Simons, being sidelined for the next 4 to 6 weeks, Shaedon Sharpe is about to do his very best to pick up the scoring load and, at the very least, put up a lot of shots. In the two games with Simons sidelines, Sharpe has scored 20-plus points in both of those games. Lock him in for 20 a night for the next month or so. Fourth, I'll go with Dennis Schroeder. He's riding the highs of a successful summer, winning the FIBA World Cup. Schroeder has continued his strong play coming out of the gates and is now playing solidified starter minutes, currently averaging just over 34 minutes a contest. Counting on Dennis for 12 points, 6 assists is a safe nightly add to a same-game parlay, as he's currently averaging just over 15 points per game and is fifth in the league in assists, averaging 9 dimes. And that will do it for this one of our best bet section. Let's go ahead and get to our final thoughts. And Bruce, I'll start with you.
Last week when we did our season preview, I pointed out that Chris Paul started every game of his 19-year NBA career, but I wondered if his ego could handle coming off the bench if Steve Kerr went in that direction. Well, on Sunday, he did just that. He came off the bench, played 27 minutes, had 8 points, 5 boards, 7 dimes, just 1 turnover, and a team best plus 22 in an 11-point win at Houston. With Draymond Green returning to the lineup, CP3 was the first guy off the bench, and while I picked Pat Connaughton of the Bucks to win Sixth Man of the Year, if this is Chris Paul's role moving forward and he leads the second unit like he did on Sunday night, that Sixth Man of the Year award could very well be his.
Absolutely. Got to keep an eye on CP3 there, or some are calling him CP6 as the sixth man. So nice job there, Bruce. World B?
Yeah, I wonder who said Chris Paul would win Sixth Man of the Year last week. I'm just trying to remember that. It's a little fuzzy to me, but last week I predicted Victor Wembanyama would wind up winning Rookie of the Year award, and one week in, he certainly looks like he's going to live up to the hype, which would absolutely be saying something. One player we didn't mention among the top rookies, but one that I think we'll be hearing a lot from this season, is Charlotte's Brandon Miller. Right now, the number two overall selection is kind of an answer to a trivia question, who was taken between Wemby and Scoot Henderson. But I'm here to tell you the kid can play. He scored double figures in all three games, which included Monday night's game where against the Nets, where he got his first 20-point game. And he's demonstrated freak-like athleticism, as well as a solid shooting touch from the outside. The Hornets are a team that doesn't have a ton of size, so the best chance for success is to get up and down the court. And with a player like LaMelo Ball running the show, we could see a lot of Brandon Miller finishing at the other end. By the end of the season, Wemby will still be the man to take home the award, but I believe the runner-up will end up being Brandon Miller.
Yeah, Brandon Miller off to a hot start there, and a guy that's already gotten under the skin of Isaiah Stewart. And we saw that in Charlotte's recent game against the Pistons. So that says something. I mean, the only other guy to get under Stewart's skin to where, you know, he got some technicals was LeBron James. So that's some good company there for the rookie Miller. As for my final thought, I just wanted to provide our listeners a quick update on the podcast. You can certainly expect one podcast a week throughout the season. And whenever there is major news, whether that be a trade, a big time player performance, etc., we'll be dropping an emergency podcast to break it all down for you with our reactions. So stay tuned. We certainly appreciate your support. We're excited to be back here on the 48 Minutes podcast, I believe. And with this edition, I say so long and take care.